Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is our final half hour. We're going to spend it continuing our conversation with Pastor Bill Swirla, pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, talking about worship in an age of relativism. Now, he's written an essay titled Christian Worship in a Postmodern Age, and you can read it for yourself at a great new website called oldsolar.com. His essay, Christian Worship in a Postmodern Age, appears there. Bill, before we go on, tell us a little bit about this website, oldsolar.com.
The website, I'm not sure quite when it got started. It started by a fellow by the name of Rick Ritchie, who's sort of associated with a frequent guest on your show, Rod Rosenblatt,
yeah,
and the White Horse Inn crowd and that. And he wanted to put together a website that would bring together some articles that were provocative in the sense of making people think about how they think, and being oriented toward culture and apologetics, and basically, you know, reaching out into the deeper parts of our culture in terms of the atheist and those who are very sour on the church, to provide them with some things to read that may cause them to think a bit differently about things, and also for Christians too, to want to kind of explore some things in a more provocative way. There's a nice side article with mine on PowerPoint, written by a fellow by the name of Steve Burns, and he has similar things to what I have to say about the screen as a way of learning. He looks specifically at PowerPoint, because that's become very popular with speakers in general, and even preachers are trying to use that tool. And he does a nice analysis of the tool in terms of its strengths and weaknesses. And one of the points that I appreciate about what he makes there is that PowerPoint is a presenter-oriented, not a hearer-oriented tool. In other words, and I know that because I've used it myself, not in the pulpit, but in the classroom. And it's a fast way to get a lecture together, but you really don't care if the people get the point. But it's very friendly to the speaker. It's a speaker-friendly tool.
Now, one of the dangers of the screen, this now ubiquitous screen. I'm sitting here in a studio, 1, 2, 3, 4, at least 4 in front of me at this point. If I had the laptop on here, that would make 5. Every office has got one in it, a computer screen, television screens, the big screen that many people find on Sunday morning in church. It reduces everything to entertainment. Even, and I don't want to jump ahead to the cell phone, but even now on the cell phone, my brother's cell phone, I was looking at it about a year ago. It's got a full-color screen. When it rings, SpongeBob comes out of the pineapple and makes a joke.
There you are. The screen has invaded the phone now. You know, there's nothing that doesn't have a screen. I just bought a digital camera for Christmas, and you know, it's got a screen. But you know, these aren't bad. You just have to know. It's like when you have a toolbox, you don't try to drive nails with a Phillips head screwdriver. It's just not going to work terribly well. And the question is, one of the questions I have is a tool like this, is it the same as preaching, or is it something different, you know, when it comes into the church? That's something that I really have to ask myself. And my conclusion is no. The sermon is more of it's an interpersonal experience. It is a preacher and his people. There's something very profound. There is communion there. It's not simply communication. It's communion. That when you interpose a screen, you are putting something in between the speaker and his hearers. You know, the ancients wouldn't have liked this very much because there's a loss of integrity and honesty there. And, you know, one of the things that I summarize, I'm, you know, borrowed freely from Postman here, credit him with this, but you know, he says that the screen has this threefold effect. It reduces things to entertainment. It's images, one after the other, moving very quickly. The average time of a scene on TV is roughly 3 seconds. You know, do that sometime if you can. Abstract. Just time. Watch on your clock how long a particular scene lasts. It's very quick. The other interesting exercise is to ask for the written transcript of this evening's show. you know how they say that at the end of these educational shows, for a written transcript, you know, send $5, and you'd be surprised how little actually is in the show when you reduce it to a written transcript.
Oh, it's amazing.
You go back and say, is that all there was? You know, you could read it in 5 minutes, but you know, because it's really not conveying all that much information. Which leads to the second problem is trivialization. The problem is that everything looks kind of the same, whether you're talking about the latest Britney Spears escapade to the war in Iraq or some wreck on the freeway. It's just all treated the same. And the other problem is that when you get bombarded with enough of this, you become desensitized. Because I don't know how much atrocity a human being can handle. And you know, most of the stuff we hear on TV is not really affecting our daily life, and yet it upsets us greatly. I've noticed a phenomenon in my classroom. I tried PowerPoint this year to teach Old Testament because you can put up neat slides of Mount Sinai or, you know, the Negev or some Egyptian stuff when they're in Egypt. And it's a nice way to get that kind of visual in where formerly you had to use slides or overheads. But I've been using sort of the bullet point approach, and I've noticed that as soon as that screen lights up, the eyes glaze over. And I find it much easier to command attention with a marker board and allow the points to be developed out as you go. There's a give and a take, and there's a relationship that develops between teacher and student that's simply not there when you're just pushing through the PowerPoints. And the way that PowerPoint tries to make things more appealing is through animation of the points. So the points dance into place, or they spin into place, or they invert, or they dissolve, or, you know, there are like 100 different animation schemes. Again, reducing that to entertainment, because that's what the eye is looking for. The eye is looking to be entertained.
Pastor Bill Swirla is our guest. We're talking about worship in an age of relativism. Our call-in number is 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, calling from our nation's capital, listening on the Internet. Nicole, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, I'd like to commend both of you for what you're saying. I grew up secular in a very strong, intellectual, success-driven family and surroundings, and didn't come to God until a couple of years ago, didn't even know anything about God or how to go about knowing God. So there was no connection in the two worlds within me. Since turning to God, I've had to pretty much, I wouldn't say go solo, because I'm very selective on the sermons that I listen to and the books that I read. I end up reading Spurgeon and Luther and Gurnall from the 1600s, etc., because I want it blunt and I want the truth. And if I want a show, I'll go to the Kennedy Center. I go to a church locally, and I go in, and, you know, there's 7 or 8 or 15 minutes of sermon, and fluff and interruptions, and that's not why I'm following God. To me, I agree with you, because I would support a church that was direct, and I'm going for a purpose, to learn about God and to follow God, not to be entertained.
Nicole, thank you very much. Your thoughts, Bill?
Quite an articulate statement there. And I she's right. You know, one of the problems is that we have become so immediate and so virtual that everything, including what we know, is disposable. And we've lost that sense of there are people before us who have believed fervently, often have shed their blood confessing these things. The only way we have this is in their writings. I'm staring at the writings of the church fathers in my study. You know, I was pointing out to somebody the other day, she says, well, how do we even know what the church of the second century was like? And I pointed to those books. I said, they still tell us. You know, they have recorded that story for us, and they've told us. And it keeps us from this kind of cultural arrogance that we're the only ones who've ever gotten it straight, and you know, we've evolved into some kind of, you know, much more intelligent being, when indeed we've become trivial, and our knowledge has become disposable. It's just hit the delete key and it's gone. I commend anybody who sits down and reads the great Christian classics, you know, people like Luther and Spurgeon, when you realize there were men and women of great substance and belief in the past on whose shoulders we sit.
The second cultural icon is the cell phone. Why is it significant?
Well, the one leads into the next. The cell phone is a fascinating thing because I don't have one. But I love watching the whole social pattern that's developed around it. People seem to have this need to be in constant communication. But what I notice is there's a loss there. I call it communication without communion. So you can be actively engaged in a conversation like you and I are, you know, with some people listening in, and completely exclude the person across the table in front of you. In fact, we've got a whole problem of social etiquette now. You know, do you talk on your cell phone at the restaurant, or do you know when is it appropriate, inappropriate? And you notice when people talk on the cell phone, they have to tuck themselves in the corner, both to hear and also if they're wired the way some are wired with the hands-free thing, it doesn't look like you're talking to yourself out loud. The first time I saw a person with one of these things at the airport, I thought she was crazy. She's just carrying on this huge animated conversation with herself, and then I realized there's a little wire that went down the side of her neck into her pocket, and she was talking on her cell phone. But we are in communication with people who are not there, and we are not in communion with the very people who are there, whom the scriptures define as my neighbor, that is the one whom the Lord has placed in my path at that moment.
And this isn't just... this is what happened when we have to use this technology. There's a shift in the way we're thinking about how we communicate involved here, it seems.
There's a little bit of like we have in medicine, just because you can do it doesn't mean you have to do it. Just because you have the ability to call somebody up at any time, any place, doesn't mean you must. And it becomes a kind of... It seems like the silence is very frightening to people. I was talking to a junior high kid who wandered into our church a month ago, and the kid had an earpiece on. He had his cell phone on, you know, and I said, what are you doing with a cell phone? And he says, you know, my mother makes me wear it. And apparently his mother calls him continually to just find out what he's doing, where he is, you know. And I said, you poor kid. I said, when I was a kid, we just got on our bikes and we rode far away from mom. You know, and she couldn't call us. But these kids are wired in, and it creates this kind of illusion of safety and concern and everything else. But there's this idea that we're in constant communication. Email is like that, too. Spend a lot of time, you know, fluffing through emails and things like that, when in essence it's kind of cheap communication. You don't even need a stamp. You just sort of type it out and send it off. And people have found that they say things that they wish they hadn't said later, because they are not really having communion with that person. It's not really a communication that's based on a relationship of one to another, but it's chatter. It's kind of at the level of ham radio.
And then it's bled over, I think. This kind of communication is cheapened. It's bled over into the way we communicate in every other way. Then we say things that we wish we hadn't said on the telephone, too, whereas the telephone used to be a bit of a ritual. You know, you actually had to communicate through an operator. When you spoke to someone, there were hellos, there were goodbyes, there were pleasantries, and this all seems to have disappeared.
Yeah,
I have people who call me on a regular basis. They don't even say hello or identify themselves. They just start their first sentence.
Yeah, social etiquette seems to have bitten the dust. And I think one of the reasons is we don't have that face-to-face, eye-to-eye accountability for our actions. And see, that's again where the congregation is kind of a unique place, because this is like the bar in that TV show Cheers, you know, where everybody knows your name. And if you hang around in a congregation long enough, they're going to learn about all the ways that you mess up. And so we're just this bunch of sinners, you know, naked to the world and to God, But we see each other. We have to coexist together. We have to put up with each other in the pews and everything else. And I think that's becoming sort of a rare thing in the culture. It's why I think it's very important to check those cell phones at the door before you come into church, because it really does interfere with that communion.
The headphone is the third cultural icon that you comment on. And I got to read this because it because it's just marvelous. You say, I see the day coming when the hymn of the day spot in the liturgy will consist of everyone putting on their own personal iPod and dialing up their favorite spiritually uplifting traditional contemporary hip-hop, grunge, goth, whatever kind of music. And I see the same day coming when they hand out iPods at the door rather than hymnals.
Yeah, it's going to kind of look like the UN, you know, where everybody's got a headphone on. At least there, they're all hearing the same thing, each in their own language and dialect, whereas this will be kind of, you know, whatever you want to tune into at the time for your spiritual experience, you know, go ahead. I think it's the next logical thing to the blended service or the, you know, the grab bag kind of liturgy where we're going to try to give a little bit of something to everybody. This is where you can all have it your own way all at the same time. I say that sarcastically, but I have this sort of gnawing feeling that it might actually happen one day somewhere. And I don't know about you, but I'm sort of longing. I wish I were Irish, because I that may be the last culture that sings together. You know, they sing about their history and battles won and lost and, you know, all of this kind of stuff. But it really is. Corporate singing is a way that you confess things together and you hand on those things because the little ones pick it up from the adults and this whole idea of having a common music and music as one of those glues, those adhesives that binds culture together is not there anymore. It's really a rather divisive thing. Even in a generation group, there are all kinds of little microcultures that are, you know, that gravitate around different kinds of music. And the only way you can sustain that is everybody plugs their headphones in their own ears and listens to their own music to the exclusion of everybody else.
You write about being wise in the ways of worship. What do you mean?
Where did I say that?
Well, you talk about our culture of being searching for identity, isolated individuals, connected with no one, disconnected from facts, and you say it would behoove the Christian to be wise in the ways of worship.
Yeah, and I think that means, first of all, understanding why we do what we do. I think too often we trade out the treasures. We're a little bit like the Antiques Roadshow, where we come in with this bundle of stuff and we don't realize what the value is until somebody gives us an appraisal, and then we're shocked that we have a $5 million Ming vase, you know, and we were using it as an ice cube holder at the last Christmas party. We do that with the elements of our worship. And I think, you know, first of all, we need to be wise about the value of what's been handed to us. The hymnody of the past, like that woman that talked about the great preachers of the past, also the hymns of the past. I've been reading the Gerhardt hymns, the hymns of Paul Gerhardt. And, I mean, there are some marvelous, marvelous things that have been written that speak to our condition and to our salvation in Christ today, maybe more clearly today than ever, because it's coming from a voice outside of our age. And also being very smart about how these things are done. I think the days are gone when we can be sloppy about our liturgics or be careless about them. I think we have to invest every bit of our energy and creativity, all of our God-given gifts, to doing the liturgy in a way that honors God, that approaches God with reverence and awe, and that extols the gifts of Christ, that doesn't put us at the center, doesn't put a band front and center, but it puts the word of Christ front and center, his body and blood, his baptism, and draws us to those things. And I think we have to hold the gifts up very high. We have to stop being kind of as casual, I think, as we are about these things, because these are truly treasures that God has placed in our hands.
How do you respond to somebody who says, look, I understand the dangers of the culture as you've outlined it here in these cultural icons and what they have wrought, but the church ought to be wary and resist as much as possible, but the people who've come out of this postmodern culture, they will not hear regular preaching. They cannot fathom the hymns or the hymn books wherein they are found. The liturgy is indecipherable to them. Ergo, the church is left with no choice but to accommodate them.
I think that that really talks down to the people and does not treat them as intelligent human beings. I think one of the problems with some of this whole approach is it really dumbs down Christianity to a point where it's kind of embarrassing. People are capable of understanding a great deal. I think it begins first with our commitment that we say, you know, we know the value of this. You don't yet. You will. and to admit, hey, some of these hymns are hard to sing. And some of them are down near impossible to sing, but they have a value here that you will grow to, you will see, and you will begin to treasure. But you have to be patient. I think one thing is to counsel some patience here. The other thing is, I'm not sure that people are unwilling to sit through a sermon. I think people are unwilling to have their time wasted with fluff. I think that ears that are full of trivialized facts perk up when they hear preaching with authority. I think preachers shouldn't be afraid to use the authority of office and pulpit, the authority of the word, and to say, thus says the Lord, providing they're preaching the word of God, with all that effect, and to not think so much about communication, but communion. It's about you. It's for you. God is speaking to you. And I think if we have a sense of that, there's a liveliness to that that I don't think you can add to by putting pretty pictures up on the wall or something.
Pastor Bill Swirla, thank you so much for being our guest. Look forward to future conversations with you. Pastor Bill Swirla is pastor of Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in Hacienda Heights, California, and he's authored this essay, and it appears on a great new website called oldsolar.com. His essay is titled Christian Worship in a Postmodern Age. We've talked a lot about technology. Speaking of technology, Pastor Matt Harrison of LCMS World Relief will be joining us live tomorrow on Issues Etc. via satellite phone from Nairobi, as he has before when he's made his African treks. Well, we're going to be discussing Christianity in Africa as he speaks to us live from Africa tomorrow. We'll also study the hymn, Oh Goody, Goody, Goody. This is one of my favorite hymns. I first came into contact with it not through the hymnal, but through popular pop star Sting, who has put it on one of his albums called The Angel Gabriel. It is a beautiful, beautiful rendition of the Annunciation in hymn form. Pastor Henry Gehrke will be our guest of the Concordia Seminary Chorus. And then tomorrow on the program, we'll also have Pastor Randy Golter. We're going to be answering this question, the question, who is Jesus? That's tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Issues Etc. has the perfect Christmas gift for your children and grandchildren. It's a book titled A Tree for Christmas. It's our Issues Etc. book of the month for December. You can find out more on our website at issuesetc.org. Just click the What's New section, or by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. A Tree for Christmas costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling. 1-800-325-3040.